The Chavin architects built a granite platform out of one piece of stone, which was used as an astronomic observatory, known as the Coca Chinche altar. By a very elaborate system of 7 water mirrors in the surface of the stone, at certain times of the year, the brightest stars of the Pleiades cluster would be clearly observed. Known as the 7 sisters or 7 daughters in other parts of the world, the Pleiades are known in the Andean world as the 7 sheep. The Chavin temple, by the way, is, as you might guess, in the Andean world. We just thought you might enjoy that little bit of confirmation, since we continue to speak of Pleiades and entering into the photon belt and also being included in the Pleiadian galactic orbiting system. I like to be able to share these things with you. Next in my pile of very interesting information is a letter to an editor of an unnamed newspaper, but this came to me from Brockton, Massachusetts. It is from a 1988 publication, and I'm only going to read part of it, but I hope that you will attend it very carefully, very closely. Dear sir, I write you with a full heart, hoping that you will see fit to publish what I'm about to say. Mr. Harold Covington, in his The March Up Country, wrote what I consider an immortal line, and one which should be burned into the minds of all Americans. Quote, "Of course the news media lie. That is what they are for." End quote. Well, that is not what they started out to be, but that is what they are now, under Jewish control. I wish to correct that. I had Tom. They're not under Jewish control. They are under Zionist control. That means pro-Israeli control. You may call it Jewish. I am tired of offending ones who are Jewish by the slang term applied to them. I am not anti-Jewish. It is very, very unfortunate that they have had to bear the burden of this lie. But I shall continue to quote this article. And the term Jewish is applied. And at the time of this writing, there was no reason not to assume the truth of the statement. I hope all of you listeners and readers know better than this. There was never a better example of this than Tet, 1968. 20 years ago today, 1/31/1968, at 9 p.m., I and 8 other soldiers of the 82nd Airborne Division were laying by a trail near the town of Songbi, near Phuong Binh, in South Vietnam. At 9 o'clock, some 800 men of an NVA battalion came down that trail. We killed 13 of them, including all their commanders, and then escaped by fast running. That same night, about midnight, our 4-man bunker was attacked by a platoon of 30 Kong. We repulsed the attack, killing 12 of them, with no loss on our side. Next morning, I went with 2nd Platoon armored vehicles back to the ambush site where we recovered all the weapons and equipment of the dead enemy soldiers, including their top-secret attack plans, which their commander was carrying. 2nd Platoon then got into a fight with an NVA company sent to recover those papers and killed 21 of them for a loss of 2 Americans slightly wounded. That afternoon, the South Vietnamese troops discovered the rest of the enemy battalion in a narrow valley nearby. They lost two killed and 3 wounded. Our company came up in support and, with the aid of air and artillery support, killed 199 of them with no loss to ourselves. That is how the Tet Offensive went in our area. 2 weeks later, the Kong made a regimental scale attack on the town of Phuong Binh. Astoundingly, they used the same plans as the ones we had captured. My company was thus able to block their escape trap. In the following battle, we lost 3 men killed and 17 wounded, and killed 242 of the enemy, whose bodies were left afterward. In the months to come, I traveled all over Vietnam. Everywhere I went, I asked for accounts of the fighting. Everywhere, it was the same. The communist troops made suicide attacks on us and were wiped out. Never was there such a one-sided victory. I fought in many battles after that. Always, it was the same. We kill hundreds of them. We would lose 2 or 3 men. Now imagine my feelings when I got back to the United States and found out that the Tet Offensive was reported in the American media as a defeat for the United States. From that day to this, there has been 20 years of ironclad media lying. I have never heard of another case where a country won a victory which was deliberately reported to the public as a defeat. Another lie was that the people were on the communist side. In actuality, the only popular support the communists got in the whole country was among some college students at Hue or Hue. This is to be expected, since they were being brainwashed by red teachers from the U.S. The real support for the Reds was in New York and Washington, where the Jews used the lies their media told about the Tet Offensive to justify their long-planned betrayal of the Vietnamese people in 1975, when they cut off South Vietnam's fuel and ammunition in the face of the North Vietnamese invasion. The flip side of the lying media in their current cover-up of the religious war the Afghan people were waging against the communist invaders. The Mujahideen news agency released its casualty figures for 1987. Communist losses were up 10.6% to 9,217 dead, of whom about half were Soviets. Mujahideen dead numbered 3,158. Civilian deaths numbered 22,294. Civilian wounded numbered 24,671. The communists in Afghanistan have the same sort of policy as the Jews in Palestine towards civilians. In Vietnam, we used to fire H1N1 fire into the wastelands to interdict communist movement. The Reds in Afghanistan have another policy. Whenever there is a clash of any sort with the nationalists, they deliberately shell and bomb neighboring towns and villages to kill as many civilians as possible. Remember all the liberal pig squealing about how the U.S. was hitting poor innocent civilians in Vietnam? I guess the liberal swine used up all their morality on Vietnam, because you don't hear a word out of them now. In fact, the media actively conspires to hide the truth of those abominations from the American people. In fact, the media slobbered at the feet of the Red Butcher when Gorbachev came to Washington to meet with the U.S. The latest news is that a deal is in the works for the Russians to declare a phony withdrawal from Afghanistan so that the U.S. can have an excuse to cut off Afghans' ammunition supply. I hope you have space to print this, because 20 years of liberal lying sticks in my craw, and I would like someone, at least the few alive minds who read your publications, to know truth. I would also like to warn you and your readers that the next stage of the financial collapse is planned to occur in the first quarter of 1988, and the likely trigger will be a third oil hoax in the Middle East, or problems arriving from the Middle East. And I would leave that there, because this is an outdated document. But it happened, do you see? It happened right on schedule, Chilas. You who want to argue with me about New World Order and basically how you're going to have a one world order to maintain any kind of peace at all in the world, I wish you well in your dreamland. And you heard George Bush speaking of New World Order. And when did he make his famous announcements of the closing in on the New World Order? Have you forgotten? January 17th, 1999? Do you not recall Mr. Bush's address to your nation, that the world couldn't wait any longer? And then what did he say about it? As he went on to speak of the conflict and Cold War ending, what did he say? Quote, "We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of the law, not the law of the jungle." In other words, Chilas, the rule of the law as set forth by the elite New World Order government, and not the law of the people, will govern the conduct of nations. When we are successful, he said, and we will be, he said, we have a real chance at this New World Order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the United Nations founders, which was Great Britain, China, the Soviet Union, France, and the United States to govern the world. And you who forget are doomed. I remind you, you are doomed if you let this continue. Now I have a wondrous piece of information, a clipping that carries so much information that I have to take it and read it to you and comment as we go along. With all the hype about Dan Quayle talking about Murphy Brown, everything that he said was missed. And if you listen to the other 49 paragraphs as was presented to me, you have to understand that the plight is fully recognized and focused upon. Unfortunately, the brother that sent this to me does not quite understand what's going on here. What he says to me, in the little margin is, our enemy is afraid of Dan, hence we must support him. No, the enemy is not afraid of him. They have sent him forth to tell you how it's going to be. I want you to listen to this with your mind open, basically absorbing the fact that the New World Order has set forth on a mission to come right down through the protocols for the destruction of civilization as you know it, and a coming under control of the New World Order. And their thrust is always to present those things so that you can analyze where you are in them. Then they will promise to clean them up. You will listen to them, and then you'll do exactly what it said. You will support them to the point that you will destroy self. So let me just read this. It begins with what Dan Quayle said in the other 49 paragraphs. Vice President Dan Quayle spoke at a luncheon in San Francisco on May 19th. His theme was the necessity to return to old moral values of right and wrong. His speech ran to 50 paragraphs. This was paragraph 43. It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice. The American press reacted as predictably as the dogs of Pavlov. Quayle rang a bell and mouths watered. Platoons of sociologists pressed for timely quotes, fired their little penguins. Well, actually it says pop guns. Hatton can't read either. The Washington Post curled its editorial lip. The crackers and brie set sneered and snickered. Predictably, the Bush White House came down with the impotent dithers. In all this commotion, Quayle's serious message scarcely could be heard. Forget Murphy Brown. In the other 49 paragraphs, Quayle spoke with clarity and force. He said, when I have been asked during these last weeks, who caused the riots and the killing in L.A.? My answer has been direct and simple. Who is to blame for the riots? The rioters are to blame. Who is to blame for the killings? The killers are to blame. I had to think that that's pretty splendid. I can quote Little Crow when asked, how will things be? And he says, they will be exactly as they will be. To continue this quote, there's simply no excuse for the mayhem that followed the Rodney King trial. To apologize or in any way to excuse what happened is wrong. It is a betrayal of all those people equally outraged and equally disadvantaged who did not loot and did not riot. No matter how much you may disagree with the verdict, the riots were wrong. And if we as a society don't condemn what is wrong, how can we teach our children what is right? Well, you can't. But if your own elite, headed by a government of which part of that is Mr. Quayle, send in pre-planned gangs and rioters to insist upon having the riots and to stage them, then you've got a bigger problem, haven't you? Well, that's what happened. Quayle spoke for all those who believe that casual fornication out of wedlock is wrong. He made a valid point. The media profoundly influence the shaping of contemporary conduct. Of course, the media's glorification of sex has consequences. Among these consequences, in 1965, the illegitimacy rate among black families was 28%. In 1989, 65%. 2/3 of all black children were born to never married mothers. The vice president did not even remotely suggest that Murphy Brown and the media are solely responsible for illegitimacy among blacks. Neither did he blame such great society programs as general welfare and public housing. The responsibility is personal. Just as rioters produce riots and arsonists produce arson, so do irresponsible couples produce families without fathers. Unless, to continue the quote, we change the basic rules of society in our inner cities, Quaid said, we cannot expect anything else to change. We will simply get more of what we saw 3 weeks ago. New thinking, new ideas, new strategies are needed. Do you really think Mr. Quayle is going to do anything about it? How are you going to make these changes? Right now, the new thrust is some more low-cost housing, which will strip your nation of millions, if not billions, of dollars. An increase in the welfare programming of those cities. Possible birth control implants in those cities. And since the media is controlled by that elite cartel, do you really think the media is going to improve the situation? Do you think they're going to remove sex and violence from the air? So how are you going to introduce and bring about these new strategies? This is telling you that the family has been broken down. Races have been set one against each other. Cities have been set against themselves. Nation against nation. And thus and so. But this goes on to say, this article, government has a large part to play. Governmental policies, said Quayle, must be premised upon such values as family, hard work, integrity, and personal responsibility. Yes, he said it all, hasn't he? And he goes on, it is government's obligation to restore law and order. These are code words for safety, getting control of the streets, and freedom from fear. Code words, I ask you, Hatton, ask you. Well, it's code word for getting control of the streets, I promise you. Safety? Oh, yes, you're going to be safely under guard. Freedom from fear? You don't know what fear is. This same group that's going to get control of the streets will absolutely allow you no freedom, most especially from fear. How will they get control of the streets? By coming in with a force so strong, you may get freedom from the fear of those gangs. But what you've got coming in, precious ones, is going to surpass any gang operation that you have ever imagined in your wildest dreams. Continue. Government, said Quayle, can encourage the residents of public housing to become homeowners. That's good. That's very good. And here's where your low-cost housing comes in. But how in the world can these residents with no jobs manage that? So they'll have to do something else to allow that, you see. Enterprise zones will create jobs in inner cities. In other words, they will set up a structured type of work facade. Because you see, this is only interim machinations to fool part of the people some of the time here. The parents of poor children must be given a choice of public or private schools. Well, if the parents are poor children, or the parents are poor children, I suggest that there's no way for you to give them a choice because private schools cost money out of the pocket. I would assume that that is why they do not have choices now, wouldn't you? Just money. The ability to bus ones out of the area, to send them to private schools. The rhetoric sounds good. The facts and the truth are stupid. They already have the right and the choice, but they don't have the wherewithal to do it. Policies of public welfare, it continues, must be reformed to create incentives for saving and to remove the penalties for marriage. Save what? I ask you. I had Tom. What are they going to save? They're so poor that they have to be on welfare. How can they save? And remove the penalties for marriage. You know what that means, don't you? It means that if you are married and the father is in the home, you cannot get welfare. Your system is structured to negate the possibility of a man in the household working. The article goes on. Empowering the poor will strengthen families. Do you really think they're going to empower the poor? Please, Chilas. And it goes on. And right now, the failure of our families is hurting America deeply. When families fall, society fails. The anarchy and lack of structure in our inner cities are testament to how quickly civilization falls apart when the family foundation cracks. I heard Ton say, yes, absolutely. They've done it. They've pulled it off. The foundation is broken. Quaid goes on. Children need love and discipline. They need mothers and fathers. A welfare check is not a husband. The state is not a father. It is from parents and children that society learns. And it is from parents that children learn how to behave in society. It is from parents above all that children come to understand values and themselves as men and women, mothers and fathers. This was the speech that the Washington Post marked as a petty, pretty comic performance. The speech was hardly original. The Post found it morally clunky. For my own part, the author of this article states, I thought Quer was squarely on the target. Such unsophisticated talk of old-fashioned families may bore the Fingerbowl crowd. The rest of the country won't be bored at all. This was a Universal Press syndicated column by James J. Kilpatrick. And a little sub-headline there says, unless we change the basic rules of society in our inner cities, we cannot expect anything else to change. The Chavin architects built a granite platform out of one piece of stone, which was used as an astronomic observatory, known as the Coca Chinche altar, by a very elaborate system of 7 water mirrors in the surface of the stone. At certain times of the year, the brightest stars of the Pleiades cluster would be clearly observed. Known as the Seven Sisters or Seven Daughters in other parts of the world, the Pleiades are known in the Andean world as the Seven Sheep. The Chavin Temple, by the way, is, as you might guess, in the Andean world. We just thought you might enjoy that little bit of confirmation since we continue to speak of Pleiades and entering into the photon belt and also being included in the Pleiadian galactic orbiting system. I like to be able to share these things with you. Next in my pile of very interesting information is a letter to an editor of an unnamed newspaper, but this came to me from Brockton, Massachusetts. It is from a 1988 publication, and I'm only going to read part of it, but I hope that you will attend it very carefully, very closely. Dear sir, I write you with a full heart, hoping that you will see fit to publish what I'm about to say. Mr. Harold Covington, in his The March Upcountry, wrote what I consider an immortal line and one which should be burned into the minds of all Americans. Quote, "Of course the news media lie. That is what they are for." End quote. Well, that is not what they started out to be, but that is what they are now, under Jewish control. I wish to correct that. Ihaton. They're not under Jewish control. They are under Zionist control. That means pro-Israeli control. You may call it Jewish. I am tired of offending ones who are Jewish by the slang term applied to them. I'm not anti-Jewish. It is very, very unfortunate that they have had to bear the burden of this lie. But I shall continue to quote this article. And the term Jewish is applied. And at the time of this writing, there was no reason not to assume the truth of the statement. I hope all of you listeners and readers know better than this. There was never a better example of this than Tet, 1968. 20 years ago today, 1/31/1968, at 9 p.m., I and 8 other soldiers of the 82nd Airborne Division were laying by a trail near the town of Songbi, near Phuong Binh, in South Vietnam. At 9 o'clock, some 800 men of an NVA battalion came down that trail. We killed 13 of them, including all their commanders, and then escaped by fast running. That same night, about midnight, our four-man bunker was attacked by a platoon of 30 Kong. We repulsed the attack, killing 12 of them, with no loss on our side. Next morning, I went with 2nd Platoon armored vehicles back to the ambush site where we recovered all the weapons and equipment of the dead enemy soldiers, including their top secret attack plans, which their commander was carrying. 2nd Platoon then got into a fight with an NVA company sent to recover those papers and killed 21 of them for a loss of 2 Americans slightly wounded. That afternoon, the South Vietnamese troops discovered the rest of the enemy battalion in a narrow valley nearby. They lost two killed and 3 wounded. Our company came up in support and with the aid of air and artillery support killed 199 of them with no loss to ourselves. That is how the Tet Offensive went in our area. 2 weeks later, the Kong made a regimental scale attack on the town of Quang Binh. Astoundingly, they used the same plans as the ones we had captured. My company was thus able to block their escape trap. In the following battle, we lost 3 men killed and 17 wounded, and killed 242 of the enemy, whose bodies were left afterward. In the months to come, I traveled all over Vietnam. Everywhere I went, I asked for accounts of the fighting. Everywhere, it was the same. The communist troops made suicide attacks on us and were wiped out. Never was there such a one-sided victory. I fought in many battles after that. Always, it was the same. We killed hundreds of them. We would lose 2 or 3 men. Now imagine my feelings when I got back to the United States and found out that the Tet Offensive was reported in the American media as a defeat for the United States. From that day to this, there has been 20 years of ironclad media lying. I have never heard of another case where a country won a victory which was deliberately reported to the public as a defeat. Another lie was that the people were on the communist side. In actuality, the only popular support the communists got in the whole country was among some college students at Hue. This is to be expected, since they were being brainwashed by red teachers from the U.S. The real support for the Reds was in New York and Washington, where the Jews used the lies their media told about the Tet Offensive to justify their long-planned betrayal of the Vietnamese people in 1975, when they cut off South Vietnam's fuel and ammunition in the face of the North Vietnamese invasion. The flip side of the lying media in their current cover-up of the religious war the Afghan people were waging against the communist invaders. The Mujahideen news agency released its casualty figures for 1987. Communist losses were up 10.6% to 9,217 dead, of whom about half were Soviets. Mujahideen dead numbered 3,158. Civilian deaths numbered 22,294. Civilian wounded numbered 24,671. The communists in Afghanistan have the same sort of policy as the Jews in Palestine towards civilians. In Vietnam, we used to fire H1 fire into the wastelands to interdict communist movement. The Reds in Afghanistan have another policy. Whenever there is a clash of any sort with the nationalists, they deliberately shell and bomb neighboring towns and villages to kill as many civilians as possible. Remember all the liberal pig squealing about how the U.S. was hitting poor innocent civilians in Vietnam? I guess the liberal swine used up all their morality on Vietnam, because you don't hear a word out of them now. In fact, the media actively conspires to hide the truth of those abominations from the American people. In fact, the media slobbered at the feet of the Red Butcher when Gorbachev came to Washington to meet with the U.S. The latest news is that a deal is in the works for the Russians to declare a phony withdrawal from Afghanistan so that the U.S. can have an excuse to cut off Afghans' ammunition supply. I hope you have space to print this, because 20 years of liberal lying sticks in my craw, and I would like someone, at least the few alive minds who read your publications, to know truth. I would also like to warn you and your readers that the next stage of the financial collapse is planned to occur in the first quarter of 1988, and the likely trigger will be a third oil hoax in the Middle East, or problems arriving from the Middle East, and I would leave that there because this is an outdated document. But it happened, do you see? It happened right on schedule, Chilas. You who want to argue with me about New World Order and basically how you're going to have a one world order to maintain any kind of peace at all in the world, I wish you well in your dreamland. And you heard George Bush speaking of New World Order. And when did he make his famous announcements of the closing in on the New World Order? Have you forgotten? January 17th, 1999? Do you not recall Mr. Bush's address to your nation? That the world couldn't wait any longer? And then what did he say about it? As he went on to speak of the conflict and Cold War ending, what did he say? Quote, "We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order. A world where the rule of the law, not the law of the jungle. In other words, Chilas, the rule of the law as set forth by the elite New World Order government and not the law of the people will govern the conduct of nations. When we are successful," he said, "and we will be," he said, "we have a real chance at this New World Order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the United Nations founders, which was Great Britain, China, the Soviet Union, France, and the United States to govern the world. And you who forget are doomed. I remind you, you are doomed if you let this continue." Now I have a wondrous piece of information, a clipping that carries so much information that I have to take it and read it to you and comment as we go along. With all the hype about Dan Quayle talking about Murphy Brown, everything that he said was missed. And if you listen to the other 49 paragraphs as was presented to me, you have to understand that the plight is fully recognized and focused upon. Unfortunately, the brother that sent this to me does not quite understand what's going on here. What he says to me in the little margin is, "Our enemy is afraid of Dan, hence we must support him." No, the enemy is not afraid of him. They have sent him forth to tell you how it's going to be. I want you to listen to this with your mind open, basically absorbing the fact that the New World Order has set forth on a mission to come right down through the protocols for the destruction of civilization as you know it and a coming under control of the New World Order. And their thrust is always to present those things so that you can analyze where you are in them. Then they will promise to clean them up. You will listen to them, and then you'll do exactly what it said. You will support them to the point that you will destroy self. So let me just read this. It begins with what Dan Quayle said in the other 49 paragraphs. Vice President Dan Quayle spoke at a luncheon in San Francisco on May 19th. His theme was the necessity to return to old moral values of right and wrong. His speech ran to 50 paragraphs. This was paragraph 43. It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice. The American press reacted as predictably as the dogs of Pavlov. Quayle rang a bell and mouths watered. Platoons of sociologists pressed for timely quotes, fired their little penguins. Well, actually it says pop guns. Hat on can't read either. The Washington Post curled its editorial lip. The crackers and brie set sneered and snickered. Predictably, the Bush White House came down with the impotent dithers. In all this commotion, Quayle's serious message scarcely could be heard. Forget Murphy Brown. In the other 49 paragraphs, Quayle spoke with clarity and force. He said, "When I have been asked during these last weeks who caused the riots and the killing in L.A., my answer has been direct and simple. Who is to blame for the riots? The rioters are to blame. Who is to blame for the killings? The killers are to blame." I had to think that that's pretty splendid. I can quote Little Crow when asked, "How will things be?" And he says, "They will be exactly as they will be." To continue this quote, "There's simply no excuse for the mayhem that followed the Rodney King trial. To apologize or in any way to excuse what happened is wrong. It is a betrayal of all those people equally outraged and equally disadvantaged who did not loot and did not riot. No matter how much you may disagree with the verdict, the riots were wrong. And if we as a society don't condemn what is wrong, how can we teach our children what is right?" Well, you can't. But if your own elite, headed by a government of which part of that is Mr. Quayle, send in pre-planned gangs and rioters to insist upon having the riots and to stage them, then you've got a bigger problem, haven't you? Well, that's what happened. Quayle spoke for all those who believe that casual fornication out of wedlock is wrong. He made a valid point. The media profoundly influence the shaping of contemporary conduct. Of course, the media's glorification of sex has consequences. Among these consequences, in 1965, the illegitimacy rate among black families was 28%. In 1989, 65%. Two-thirds of all black children were born to never-married mothers. The vice president did not even remotely suggest that Murphy Brown and the media are solely responsible for illegitimacy among blacks. Neither did he blame such great society programs as general welfare and public housing. The responsibility is personal. Just as rioters produce riots and arsonists produce arson, so do irresponsible couples produce families without fathers. unless, to continue the quote, we change the basic rules of society in our inner cities, Quaid said. We cannot expect anything else to change. We will simply get more of what we saw 3 weeks ago. New thinking, new ideas, new strategies are needed. Do you really think Mr. Quayle is going to do anything about it? How are you going to make these changes? Right now, the new thrust is some more low-cost housing, which will strip your nation of millions, if not billions, of dollars. An increase in the welfare programming of those cities. Possible birth control implants in those cities. And since the media is controlled by that elite cartel, do you really think the media is going to improve the situation? Do you think they're going to remove sex and violence from the air? So how are you going to introduce and bring about these new strategies? This is telling you that the family has been broken down. Races have been set one against each other. Cities have been set against themselves. Nation against nation. And thus and so. But this goes on to say, this article, government has a large part to play. Governmental policies, said Quayle, must be premised upon such values as family, hard work, integrity, and personal responsibility. Yes, he said it all, hasn't he? And he goes on, it is government's obligation to restore law and order. These are code words for safety, getting control of the streets, and freedom from fear. Code words, I ask you, Hatton, ask you. Well, it's code word for getting control of the streets, I promise you. Safety. Oh yes, you're going to be safely under guard. Freedom from fear. You don't know what fear is. This same group that's going to get control of the streets will absolutely allow you no freedom, most especially from fear. How will they get control of the streets? By coming in with a force so strong, you may get freedom from the fear of those gangs. But what you've got coming in, precious ones, is going to surpass any gang operation that you have ever imagined in your wildest dreams. Continue. Government, said Quayle, can encourage the residents of public housing to become homeowners. That's good. That's very good. And here's where your low-cost housing comes in. But how in the world can these residents with no jobs manage that? So they'll have to do something else to allow that, you see. Enterprise zones will create jobs in inner cities. In other words, they will set up a structured type of work facade. Because you see, this is only interim machinations to fool part of the people some of the time here. The parents of poor children must be given a choice of public or private schools. Well, if the parents of poor children are the parents of poor children, I suggest that there's no way for you to give them a choice because private schools cost money out of the pocket. I would assume that that is why they do not have choices now, wouldn't you? Just money. The ability to bus ones out of the area. to send them to private schools. The rhetoric sounds good. The facts and the truth are stupid. They already have the right and the choice, but they don't have the wherewithal to do it. Policies of public welfare, it continues, must be reformed to create incentives for saving and to remove the penalties for marriage. Save what? I ask you. I had time. What are they going to save? They're so poor that they have to be on welfare. How can they save? And remove the penalties for marriage. You know what that means, don't you? It means that if you are married and the father is in the home, you cannot get welfare. Your system is structured to negate the possibility of a man in the household working. The article goes on. Empowering the poor will strengthen families. Do you really think they're going to empower the poor? Please, chilos. And it goes on. And right now, the failure of our families is hurting America deeply. When families fall, society fails. The anarchy and lack of structure in our inner cities are testament to how quickly civilization falls apart when the family foundation cracks. I had Tom say yes, absolutely. They've done it. They've pulled it off. The foundation is broken. He quote goes on. Children need love and discipline. They need mothers and fathers. A welfare check is not a husband. The state is not a father. It is from parents and children that society learns. And it is from parents that children learn how to behave in society. It is from parents above all that children come to understand values and themselves as men and women, mothers and fathers. This was the speech that the Washington Post marked as a petty, pretty comic performance. The speech was hardly original. The Post found it morally clunky. For my own part, the author of this article states, I thought Quayle was squarely on the target. Such unsophisticated talk of old-fashioned families may bore the finger bowl crowd. The rest of the country won't be bored at all. This was a Universal Press syndicated column by James J. Kilpatrick. And a little sub-headline there says, unless we change the basic rules of society in our inner cities, we cannot expect anything else to change.